I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. At Lighthouse, we're celebrating 23 years in business and just entering our 10th year of doing open line. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have a new 2017 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab. You can pretty much figure over 10 years we've covered as many topics you could probably think of, so you can research through there. Also, we have our publication, Keeping on Track, on that same tab. Our second book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on the homepage. Plus, this is a plus, in 2018, we will have our third book out, Cracking the Team Building Code. Tom Drucker will have a section in that book, and it will be available again after the first quarter of 2018. For those of you that work with Lighthouse, you might have met Glenn Croy, who is our new senior consultant and COO for Lighthouse Consulting. Glenn has been a COO for companies ranging from 60 people to 600 employees with a strong OD background. We're so glad to have Glenn as part of our team, and we'll be adding more individuals starting in 2018. Lighthouse is on the go. Our topic today is reorganization, a strategic advantage, being proactive, not reactive. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the very first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar. We assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, team building, stress management, workshops, and much, much more. We have an office in Taiwan, so if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas for how to interact with a U.S.-based company, just let us know. Plus, we have an affiliate now in Europe out of the UK, and so we have the capacity to cover all of Europe, so we truly are international. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is always in response to the calls we get from clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various issues that are being faced today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area. You can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of the program, we're going to open up the line if we have time, and you'll be able to talk to Tom Drucker one-on-one. We have a lot of organizations that are joining us today, so we'll jump right into our topic in just a minute. Also, you can submit questions during the program or save them until afterwards. I want to introduce a very close friend of mine, a very dear friend of mine, a business colleague, Tom Drucker. Tom is the president of corporate innovation and works with leaders to achieve business success by leveraging the strengths of their people and overcoming the very human yet often unseen obstacles that get in their way. Tom has degrees in both psychology and business from UCLA and blends these skills to deliver usable insights that have lasting impacts on their business and, most importantly, on the hearts and the minds of the people he worked with. And that's also really important, the hearts and the minds and having the lasting impact. And that's what Tom's going to be talking about today. Tom has over 30 years of experience working with Fortune 500 companies, mid-cap organizations, and startups. I feel truly privileged to have Tom back on Open Line with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be LinkedIn 4.0. Learn about accelerating connectivity like never before. Tom, I'm going to hand the program over to you, and welcome back.
Thank you, Dana. Thanks for that terrifically generous introduction. And I'm really pleased to be sharing some insights I learned pretty much right after I got out of the business school at UCLA. I was privileged to be hired by the chair the chairman of Xerox Corporation because I had helped him turn around a failing computer company that he had purchased for a lot of money. And while I was in graduate school, I helped him kind of turn that around by helping the computer people get along with the copier people because they weren't seeing eye to eye. And once they began to, they began to make money, and that made the chairman happy, and he hired me to begin to create strategies for the rest of the company that moved them into the digital age. And I had an office at their Palo Alto Research Center. And one of the things I began to observe, particularly from that august position in a global organization, was something that we're talking about today. They did a lot of reorganizations, and I began to see that they did them with alarming frequency. And I began to notice that most companies did reorganizations and reactions to marketplace declines or what seemed to be threats to the marketplace, and Xerox was growing at that time. And there did not seem to be reorganizations that were done because there were market declines. They just seemed to be doing them. And I began to look at that because I had been trained at UCLA to be a behavioral scientist, and so I thought there must be some underlying reasons that were going on. And so one of the things I learned is that there were other factors at play. So let's take a look at what some of those factors were. And I began to see what emerged was a kind of important lesson, which I've then seen replicated by very smart companies. And as it says on the slide, depending how far you look into a planning cycle, there are other things afoot. And strategic advantages can come from the way you execute organizational changes. And if you do it correctly, you can really leverage those changes into some powerful leverage points. And so what I hope to have us talk about today, and I do hope that you ask questions, and as Dana said, there are ways of doing that, and I hope you take advantage of that. I have learned a lot, both from my 15 years at Xerox and then running the company, which specializes in innovation and working with companies that want to leverage every advantage they can from their strategy and from the resources that they have in the marketplace. Because frankly, the more competitive an organization finds themselves in, the more footholds they need in that marketplace to be successful competitors. And I imagine that everyone on this call, in one way or the other, wants to have those strategic advantages. So let me give you an example of a client. I bet many of
Tom, before you share, somebody just put a note in there having problems hearing you. So maybe...
I'm sorry, do you have problems hearing me?
That's much better. That's better.
Okay.
Okay, perfect.
Good.
That's absolutely perfect. Thank you
okay,
for
good.
Sharing that.
Yeah, please, if you have trouble hearing me. And there is a dog in the background, as I mentioned, and that means FedEx is most likely making a delivery. I apologize for that. You can probably hear the dog sometimes more clearly because she has a very loud bark. I'll wait till the FedEx person leaves. Okay, are we hearing me okay? Could
perfect,
someone
perfect.
Give me some feedback?
That's perfect.
Okay, good. So what I was saying is that I suspect everyone on this call wants those strategic advantages, and I was about to give you an example. One of my clients is a division of a large global company called Assa Abloy. They're based in Stockholm, and one of their divisions is called HID, and I bet many of you on this call, if you look around your neck or in your wallet or on your desk, have a white laminate card. Some of you may have a picture on one side, and on the other it may say HID, or it may say it boldly or in the bottom right-hand corner in a very small way. And that used to stand for Hughes, the H, and those of you who are in California may know that name for Howard Hughes. Anyway, these are identity cards, And they have plants in two or three places, actually now two places around the world, Malaysia and the United States, and they make about $1.5 billion per day. Anyway, they are now embedded, that technology, in bands that you get at Disney World and Disneyland if you want to pay a price and you don't want to wait in line. You also have the same technology embedded in certain smartphones. So if you're a Starwood preferred guest and you check into certain hotels, you can use your smartphone to unlock your door. That's a technology that I have been working with them and their division, HID, to perfect for the last 10 years. So part of what they did when they knew that they were going to be rolling out the technology is they reorganized. And they did this to face off to the marketplace before this technology was even announced, so that they could be prepared to sell this technology in a way that gave them a marketplace advantage. Again, it's an example of getting their workforce ready for a way of literally changing part of their business in advance. It worked, and their sales are up over 22%. And what Disney did is embargo their ability to talk about this for 2 years. So while it, in some cases, could have frustrated
Tom?
The company.
Tom?
Yes.
Somebody wrote to me. Apparently, it was in one of the organizations is attending. They have a group, and they're huddled around the speakerphone, and if they're having, if you can maybe talk, yell into the phone or something, they're having problems hearing fully again.
Okay. Well, I'm on a handset. I'm speaking right into the handset.
There we go.
Maybe
there we go. That sounds better on this end.
Okay. So what I'll do is I'll cup my hand over the speaker part of the
perfect
handset. Maybe
perfect.
That'll help. Okay.
Thank you.
So let me just go back a couple of sentences. So because Disney embargoed their ability to speak about this for 2 years, they used that time rather than be frustrated, which is where they started, by the way. They, in some strategy meetings we had to recover from this kind of irritating customer demand, we decided to use this situation and made it an advantage, which was to take that time to reorganize and communicate internally how this was going to be a big deal when we finally could announce it. And so we negotiated with Disney when we could, how we would do it, and we made sure that when we did announce it, we could make Disney our partner in communicating this, and it worked. So we turned a negative into a positive, took the time to make the reorganization a major part of the industry announcement, and that's an example of turning a reorganization into a strategic advantage and facing off to the marketplace. And also brought in our supply chain partners because it meant that we had to size up certain vendors who were supplying these electronic components. In any case, hopefully you could hear that example. Can you get some feedback,
yes,
Dana, and make
that's
sure
good.
People are hearing me okay?
Yep, that's perfect.
Okay.
Thank you.
So frequent reorganizations occur without a clear purpose. And again, the way most companies may announce and execute those does not overcome what most reorganizations create in the organization. And we all know that change can be a real disruptor, and many reorganizations create unintended consequences. And most times leaders say, you know, sorry about that. And I saw that in my early business career at Xerox. Not all reorganizations are done with brilliance, And there were a period of time when people said at Xerox, we reorganize every 6 months whether we need to or not, because Xerox is known for being a sales-driven organization, and lots of people believe that sales-driven organizations reorganize because salespeople need change to keep their sales mentality hungry and sharp. I don't know how many of our listeners today are in sales-oriented organizations. I can tell you, as having run an organization that was responsible for redesigning a program called Professional Selling Skills 1 and 2, a very well-known sales program of years past, that is BS, and BS does not stand for behavioral science. Well, sales people need is support. They don't need to be driven by fear or uncertainty. They need to be guided, not driven. And what they need is information, not disruption. So even when there are reorganizations, as any reorganization is, requiring communication and requiring it in a way, even if there are layoffs, that the people who are laid off and the people who are retained, there needs to be clear, cogent, and rational information provided so that the organization, as well as the people and the brand, retain integrity. And this is even more critical with every passing year, because what happens is if it's missing, people remember what you would call irrational behavior is remembered longer, and it does greater damage the more competitive the marketplace is. So this slide describes what works, which is a powerful, positive communication narrative, a story, which has facts and a meaningful narrative that connects those facts, business logic. So whether it's a minor shift or a major shift, human beings want something they can understand. And I learned this early in my career, and it's been true, frankly, every day and every week and every month and year since then. And it's simple, and I can't tell you the number of times people forget it. I was on a conference call last night with a client, and there was a problem in one of their offices, and really good people were being, let's say, unfairly, their perception was they were being unfairly treated by someone in senior management who, let's say, was having a bad day. Not sexual harassment, thank God, which we've read about far too much in papers because it's rampant. This is not that. This is just someone behaving without any emotional intelligence and driving people really hard because of some missed deadlines. And a very valued employee was having some emotional and mental illness issues as a result of that, and the owners of the company got together and decided they needed to do something. And what was missing as they formulated some action plans to separate some people who were feeling abused and needed some kind of mental health breaks, they needed to actually tell people who could see this and were affected by it why they were doing something, not just what they were doing. And so small organizational actions also need a narrative. People need to know why something is happening, and it needs to make sense to them. Without that, even for the best reasons, people feel manipulated or can.
Tom,
so even... Yes, Dana.
A question just came in. How so? That sounds a little ominous. So the question is, how can a company learn how to do that and not evoke the fear thing during, after the reorganization takes place?
Well, that's a great question. And I guess the easiest way is to have on hand or call someone like myself to help them, you know, in an hour or two, listen to the facts and the desired actions and outcomes, and someone like me or a good communication expert within an hour or two can help them create that narrative. They listen, they sign off on it, and then it gets practiced so it can be said clearly and powerfully, or typed up and, you know, sent out. Because when people hear it and read it and it's said authentically and with meaning, people relax and say, oh, that makes sense. Because it has to fit the style and communication, sense of the company and the leaders who speak it. And usually within an hour or two, someone like myself can help frame that over the phone or in Skype or face-to-face, and it's done. So with a good consultant or colleague or internal person, it's usually something that can be done quite easily and simply. And then, by the way, once someone like me can teach a leadership team or an individual in charge of that, they can usually replicate it pretty easily the next time something like this comes up. Because once you see it done once, it's pretty easily to map that onto other communications. I trained an internal person in a steel company last month, and I saw that they've now been able to implement it two other times. It's really something that once you learn the, I guess you'd call it the finer points, you can replicate it. That's a good question.
So I've noticed that when an organization does a reorganization and they've done it one time or maybe two or three, if it's not done correctly, which you're describing, that word of mouth gets out in the street and it becomes very difficult to either retain people or to recruit, because here they go again.
Yeah, that's so true, Dana. And the thing is, you want to consistently communicate a positive context. And that's easy to lose. And once you lose that trust and that sense of the positive view of the future, sort of like we were talking about at the beginning of this call, it's very hard to get it back. And so, unfortunately, one misstep, sort of like one bad customer experience, can put people off for a long, long time. Because, you know, I'm sure everyone knows the sense that, you know, one bad customer experience is people talk about it for a long time. And good customer experiences are also talked about for a long time. So you want to make sure when you're communicating to your stakeholders, your employees are the most important stakeholders for most people, you really want to do it right. And consistently, you want to stay positive. Even if you don't kind of get all the words right, you want to make sure the context and the tone is correct. And reorganizations are so dicey because you're changing people's jobs or reporting relationships. And those are some of the most important things that give people certainty, comfort, security, and a sense of well-being. I think everybody knows the statistic that most people leave jobs because of their relationship with their direct supervisor. And when you alter those, it takes months for those relationships to be reestablished in positive ways or negative ways. And unfortunately, the negative relationships are established much, much quicker. Because if those are started poorly, it's difficult to recapture them in a positive way. If they're started positively, that's great. But unfortunately, most companies don't teach their managers effective communication skills, so it's a kind of crapshoot. And that's unfortunate. So it's really important that the leadership set the tone for the reorganization so it helps the managers with a opening salvo, and they're not left on their own. And that's why the communication narrative is so important.
It has to be very well thought out. I mean, I know you're going to cover that in this next next slide.
Well, that's exactly right, because as I think I mentioned, I've been fortunate enough to, because of my positive psychology training, I was very much drawn to the study of neuroleadership when it first became available because of these new types of MRIs that came online about 10 years ago. And neuroleadership and neuroscience became very much, really available to researchers. And just kind of the shorthand is the theories that I studied in, first of all, clinical psychology, and then later in business school research. So the theories of Abraham Maslow and people like Carl Rogers, who really pioneered the field of emotional intelligence applied in the workplace, and then people like Goldman came along and wrote really good books about it, so that those theories of empathy and very active collaboration could be applied in practical ways in the workplace. But they were really theories. Then we saw these reflective MRIs where we could see how the brain functioned under certain conditions. So we now have hard science that says if we are able by intention to move from a fear-based way of operating to a more creative and collaborative way of operating, we can see how the frontal cortex can be intentionally activated. And then we know with practice there's a physiological phenomena called neuroplasticity. And many of you may have read about this in the popular press. It means that our brains can actually be rewired. And with practice, we can be more naturally drawn to use our creative frontal cortex and come from fear. And so, as it says here in the first bullet, every human brain has a capacity for fear-based reactions as well as behaviors that support creativity. And that's huge. I mean, that is amazing. That helps couples, married couples, stay together where they fought ferociously for years. That means that teams that were about to break apart a company. I was brought in 3 years ago, a three-person partnership. These happened to be guys, were fighting so ferociously that there was, according to people who knew them, almost zero chance that this partnership would stay together a few more weeks. And believe me, when I heard them in a meeting, it was ugly. And I listened to them individually, and I set them down collectively, and I said, guys, you got two choices. You can certainly break the company apart, which is a shame because it's making money, and you employ a number of good people, but it's your choice. Or you can learn a few simple skills and stay together. And I said to them, I said, you know, I don't care. You just brought me in to tell you what I see and what I professionally believe. I said, but it would be a shame. You know, my personal assessment would be a shame. And we spent a little time together, and they decided to give it a try. And now they're really doing great. They're making twice as much money as they ever did. They are happier. They don't fight. They have disagreements, but they really don't fight. And they feel better. I mean, just physiologically, emotionally, they're happier. doesn't mean they don't disagree, but they know how to fight fairly and respectfully. And it's never about their personalities anymore, as it was. They fight about ideas or decisions or issues, and then they, you know, make a decision and move on, like adults do. And they're now operating like adults. And so the takeaway here is it's up to all of us as leaders, managers, associates at every level to remember that you can be positive and purposeful. And that if you're going to change something, do it with intention and a creative focus. Don't do it so that you create fear in an organization. And I can tell you, I learned that many times the hard way when I saw it done poorly at Xerox and I saw it done well at Xerox. And I set myself some goals to try never to put people in a situation where they didn't understand what was happening to them. And then lately, the last 10 years, I actually began to learn the tools and methods that could help each human being in an environment be communicated with so they could truly help themselves and each other. And there's nothing like a community of common purpose. There is nothing like being part of an organization that truly has a common focus on their future and a belief in the future. Because isn't that what you want in an organization? Isn't that what you want, being part of an organization that has a commitment to the future? I can tell you that the people in HID are so excited and proud of what they have in this new type of technology, and it's just the tip of this new iceberg. And even though it's one of the smallest divisions of one of the largest lock and door companies in the world, and you don't know them very well because Assa Abloy isn't a brand. Yale Locks is a brand, you all know. And nobody knows the brand of HID unless you happen to be very inside this quite unique ecosystem. But you certainly know how you can pay $300 and never wait in the line at Disney World, or know that you can open a door with your smartphone. Yes, Dina?
A question came in. What are the three primary reasons for reorganizing?
Well, typically the most common reason is there is some business downturn or what I would call a need to be reactive. For most mid-sized companies, or even some large companies, there's some disruption to a strategy that causes them to, oh, heck, I got to do something I haven't planned on. That's still the dominant reason for reorganization. The second is an unexpected growth, a new contract, integration of an acquisition, being acquired, something like that. So this client of mine that's public knowledge, VCA, part of the acquisition required them to sell a few hospitals, and Mars, who has large holdings in health veterinary care, had to sell a few of their hospitals because the Federal Trade Commission required it. So there were some minor reorganizations that were required because of the acquisition. And the third is what we're talking about here, that there's a strategic decision made that's going to help the company grow. So those would be, in my experience, the three in order of priority.
So, Tom, I know you also do strategic planning with companies globally. So is this a topic regarding reorganization that should be part of the strategic planning process every year?
It should be, and it's not often enough in my experience, because often Well, first of all, let me put it just bluntly. Reorganizations are expensive, both in terms of the cost and the time and the human cost. So a reorganization is not something that many organizations consider as one of the top three things they do when they plan out a strategy. They might think moving a few people, but a larger reorganization of a division or moving more than, 10 or let's talk percentages, depending on how big they are, moving more than a single digit of their workforce around or changing more than a single digit of some percentage of their jobs is usually not part of a strategic plan unless there's some new technology that's being integrated, like I talked about at HID. Usually not, in my experience, unless there's a really dramatic growth for some reason, then you're typically adding people, which is usually not considered a reorganization. It's just usually considered a growth plan, which may involve people, having enlarged jobs or adding people to a division, which is, again, usually not considered the same degree of change as a typical reorganization.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. I hope that's helpful.
That's very helpful. Onward to takeaways.
So how you think and speak about a reorganization matters, and hopefully this is a conversation we've had where my message is do it consciously, intentionally, practice it, notice how you can frame it and contextualize it because that matters a lot. And practice scenarios so you keep your planning, thinking, and agility in, as I call it colloquially, tip-top shape. Most people, in my experience, need guidance at that, not necessarily just consultant guidance. They need to step away and really think about it. And there's insufficient automatic thinking about this. It really needs to be prodded. I mean, head of strategic planning can do that. And I know many organizations will ask the head of business development or strategy or human resources to be that provocateur. But again, sometimes they don't. So it's important to make sure that there is someone on the top team who is held accountable to be that point person who makes sure that that is done. And again, there is no substitute for providing a powerful, positive, and compelling reason for any kind of change to your structure. And again, I believe there's not enough thought given to that, and I hope I'm wrong. You know, I hope that people on this call say, gee, Tom is underestimating our organizational intelligence about this and underestimating the amount we've learned in the last several organizational changes we've made. We've made mistakes and we've learned from that. I hope that's the case. But unfortunately, I have not seen as much of that, particularly after recessions. You'd think there would be learning about that, but unfortunately I have not seen that. So I hope I'm wrong, and maybe I just have a narrow view of the marketplace. But so far, no one has come knocking at my door and sent me emails and said, you're totally off base.
Actually, Tom, this reminds me of a story of Patagonia, and the CEO shares this story openly, so it's not behind closed doors. When just before the big recession was going to hit, they had a large catalog mailing that was about to go out, and then they started to see changes in the marketplace. So the CEO, being responsible, came up with a financial plan, and there were going to have to be some very deep cuts within the organization. The CEO went home and spoke to his wife about this, and she said, that's not what we represent at Patagonia, something like that. The goal of Patagonia is to be respectful of everybody around you, and people need to be informed. So what he did, so of course he gave pushback. Said, "Look, I have to protect the company's assets." And so they came up with an idea with the management team to have an all hands on deck meeting with every employee in the entire organization. The CEO shared the dilemma that the organization was in, and the group decided to give them 2 weeks to break up into small little groups and to come back with ideas of how the company can make it through this nasty recessionary time.
Fabulous.
They ended up not letting people go. They made some adjustments in salary, I think, but collectively they came up with a marketing plan, which they ran full-page ads in the New York Times, et cetera, of if you own a Patagonia jacket, et cetera, please don't buy another one. We want to respect the environment. Well, guess what happened? Sales went up. So that's an interesting story of taking everything you've talked about today, Tom, in a real-life practice. Now,
that's
the question
great.
That just came in. In most companies, the organization has been hierarchical, probably not the most ideal way to be organized to take advantage of talent at all levels and truly be innovative. What do you think about structures that are more lateral, collaborative, and less hierarchical?
I think it's a great example of what's called servant leadership, where you really do harness the power of everyone in the organization. The typical metaphor is you turn the pyramid upside down, and that the leader's responsibility is to get out of the way of people and let them fully harness their collective intelligence. It's a powerful idea. It's been around since I was in graduate school, and it's still very much powerful message today, even more powerful, some would say. I certainly would agree with that. And Patagonia is one of the companies that all of us in the field of behavioral science respect and use as a place of learning and experimentation. Just because of that kind of story, it's a great example.
And as you brought up, look at the positive word of mouth that I just brought up. So Patagonia is getting wonderful word of mouth because they did the right thing in being inclusive. And matter of fact, part of that discussion they had with the all-hands meeting and everyone participating in the process was to create a transparency throughout the entire organization. So if a zipper or a button is made wherever it is in the world, people can see how it got transported. Was it a truck or a train or a ship? And what's the impact on the environment? So it really took on all these different levels because of what you talked about, Tom, is going back to being creative and thinking out of the box and not letting an accounting issue run away with fear versus tackling it in a positive, proactive way. Is that a good
exactly.
summary?
It's also a perfect example of this fourth bullet on the takeaway page, because you support people, you stay positive in the face of change, and everyone wants meaning and purpose in their life and in their work, and you give them that with this kind of opportunity, and they were able to put their actions in play and see them make a difference. And obviously it did, and it gave them an opportunity to save their jobs and to see the company grow as a result of their counterintuitive actions. It's
right.
A terrific example of, again, this idea that reorganization can be a strategic advantage. In this case, they didn't reorganize as much as they rethought their opportunity in the face of a potential reorganization.
Ooh, that's well put. Any closing thoughts, Tom?
Well, my closing thought is I hope people, number one, take this message about how to harness their physical brain and read up on it. There's a book that I particularly like. It's called Mindsight. It's a really interesting book by Daniel Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L, called Mindsight, The New Science of Personal Transformation. It is an amazing, well, first of all, it's an easy read. He tells a lot of stories. He's a well-respected psychiatrist, a colleague who has for years really been at the forefront of this science of studying the way the brain works. I would highly recommend it. It's not a professional book. It's a popular book. It's read by professionals and normal people, you know, who just are people like the folks I assume on this call, and I give it to my clients because it really does provide a kind of useful access to just the way each of us can harness our own intentions to make our lives easier, because nobody wants to be controlled by our fear, even though it mostly is an unconscious experience, not necessarily up in front of us all the time, but more than you would notice necessarily, it does dominate certain parts of our life. And one of the things that's my mission as a human being and as a professional is to make sure people in the workplace are not driven by their fears, but have a chance to make work a form of creative self-expression. And in doing so, make work a pleasure and purposeful and give their life meaning and purpose, as it says here. So I hope all of you on this call find more meaning, purpose, and pleasure in your work life and give that to others, and that you do that in your daily work. And if you do make changes, that you help make those changes positive for you and the people that you work with. And thank you for participating.
Tom, this has been wonderful. We're going to open up the line in just about 30 seconds. So if anyone has questions for Tom directly, you can talk with him. I'm going to turn the recording feature off in just a second because we've been told by listeners in the past they prefer not to have their voice recorded. If you want to contact Tom directly to have a deeper discussion on this vast topic, you have the Tom's phone number and email address to get hold of him, and he'll be more than happy to have a lively conversation with you. On November 16th,
sure,
we have our next open line. It will be about LinkedIn, and I'm sure you'll have a lot of fun, so you can sign up for that right now. Before I close this section of our discussion down, I'd like to first of all ask everyone to please put your phone on mute, and if you have a question for Tom, then unmute your phone, but make sure you don't put your phone on hold, otherwise we'll all be listening to music. But to close this section down, I want to thank Tom very much for first of all being a close friend of ours, my friend and of Lighthouse and of our clients, and appreciate you taking the time to share the valuable information. So let me turn this off.
A true pleasure.
Let me turn the recording feature off, and we'll be right back in just a few seconds.